Welcome to Matinee Screening. I'm Joel.
I'm John. And this week on the show, we have a very special guest, and it is my wife, Alexa. And say hi.
Hi.
And hi, Alexa.
And this week, we're going to talk about three journalism movies in celebration of my wife's profession. We're going to talk about Network, Paper, and Shattered Glass. So we're going to go in chronological order.
Right.
Just for no particular reason whatsoever.
And we're going to start with... Solomon.
I suppose. And we're going to start with Network. So, Joe, what did you think of this movie?
Network's a movie you have to like, isn't it?
I'm pretty sure.
Shame on you for not liking this movie if you don't.
Well, if it is, I think it's something you should keep secret.
Yeah, I can agree with that. It's such a standard thing now. It's, you know, it's in the pantheon of movies that are so important and so culturally significant that even if you don't want to watch it for just the entertainment and enjoyment's sake, it's such an important movie to watch that you still need to appreciate it, I feel. Basically, Network is about a fledgling evening news program that's kind of at the end of its rope, and it has two more weeks to air at the beginning of the movie. And so then the announcer pretty much announces that it's getting canceled, and so he's going to commit suicide on next Tuesday's broadcast. And then, you know, understandably, Network goes crazy, but this, you know, he starts this whole tirade of crazy talk, basically.
Of populism, almost, and it for some reason gets incredible ratings, and it spins off into... And then this Faye Dunaway character comes in, who's I assume head of programming, I think.
Yeah.
And she just takes it and bastardizes it and makes it nothing resembling a news show whatsoever. And it becomes kind of the precursor to Fox News in a lot of ways, where it's just entertainment and it's a lot of yelling and it's a lot of demagoguery. And it's impressive. This movie was released in 1976, and it was sort of like a, this is what could happen if you're not careful, like a 1984 of broadcast news. And apparently
we weren't careful.
Apparently we weren't careful. So as somebody who works in the industry, what did you think about Network when you first saw it?
Well, I mean, I obviously work in print, not broadcast, but just in media in general. The first time I saw it, I mean, I really loved the movie because, like Joel said, it's a classic movie that it's really hard not to like. But as a media professional, it actually made me really depressed because I think it was a really sort of prophetic movie. I mean, you compared it to Fox News, but I compare it a lot to, you know, if the Peter Finch character, you know, that's something that would be on YouTube today and get millions of hits in instance. People love watching people like that kind of collapse. That's entertaining to people. I would think that that's almost more of a precursor to kind of like the reality TV train wreck type scenario. And that's what people want to see now. And, you know, while things might not, I don't want to give away the ending. How do you do spoilers on this podcast about to talk about the ending or no?
I don't think so.
Yeah, we usually...
this isn't a popular enough new movie where it's not...
All
right, spoiler alert. Well, basically at the end, you know, they have him killed. And I don't think, you know, hopefully, I wouldn't think that that would be true today. But so much else of the tone of the movie, you know, did kind of come true. And that's really sad.
And I totally get in the beginning of the movie why he sort of gets the following he does, because there's the famous scene that, if you haven't seen Network, you've at least seen this, where it's the "I'm mad as hell and I'm not going to take it anymore," and everybody shouts it from their windowsills in New York, and
it's kind of like this kickoff of
and you totally get that and you're with them, and then it just keeps going and going, and it makes a little bit of sense as to where they go with it because it keeps getting higher ratings, but it. At a certain point, you really lose it from this sort of populist message to whatever it becomes.
Well, it's this kind of following where, you know, you see it in real world news today. Like, I guess with the Occupy movement, where like the first time I heard about it, I was like, oh, somebody's taking a stand. And like, it's this thing where they've had enough and, you know, going on and taking the fight. They don't really fight.
Have a solution, but they're just and like, then I'm the
more
pissed
you,
off.
The more you watch it.
I'm not as hell and I'm not going to take it anymore.
Yeah. So right away, you know, you feel really empowered and you're ready to go with them. And now you're like, oh, this is kind of like just a train wreck. Nobody, people are just talking. Nobody's actually saying anything, which is
and you can see it in even, you know, positive ways. You look at Jon Stewart and a lot of what I see just with his following and everything has a very Howard Beale quality. He definitely doesn't do the same kind of crazy talk that Howard Beale did, but you can see how somebody gets so wrapped up in this one person for no other reason than they were the first to vocalize an idea that they kind of had. Like, they put into words what these people were feeling, even if they couldn't put it into words themselves.
And he's very charismatic.
Hmm.
Like, he's Peter Finch did a great job as this character, because I could see, you know, actually watching this guy for the entertainment value as much as for the message that he's trying to get across.
And then I think it's interesting too, and kind of with that entertainment value, where does that take over and kind of the humanity, you know, lose it? Because like, you have like the William Holden character, I can't remember his name, it's off my head right now, but he kind of in the end kind of starts to realize how ridiculous this is all getting. And then you have the Faye Dunaway character. She's a shark. I mean, she's the one that kind of ends up orchestrating everything, and she essentially wins in the end.
Yeah.
And
kind of doesn't care.
She doesn't care, and it seems like there are more and more of those types of people that are, you know, still in power today.
And this is also the long... Apparently news is boring. Like, all of these things are about, like, well, people don't like to watch the news, but yeah, we need to make it more entertaining. But you kind of realize how important news is, because even if Peter Jennings could be a bit dull in the way he presented it sometimes, the facts were important, and not diluting that due to entertainment or shouting figureheads or a studio audience, it does remind you how important it is.
Well, I mean, I can remember, like, that's probably one of the earliest things I didn't like in the world was news, because, like, as like maybe 2 to 3, you know, Sesame Street would go off and NewsHour with Jim Lehrer would come on, and I'd run screaming from the room because this is the most boring thing that could happen in the world.
Because Desert Storm was more boring than Pokemon was?
Oh, you have no idea. And so, you know, the thing is, I'm not 3 anymore. I should understand the intrinsic value of news. But there's still that little bit of me where I'm like, oh, this guy's just going to talk for half an hour.
I don't care about unemployment.
So,
but it was also, I think that this is, in my opinion anyway, probably one of the best made movies ever produced. Because, I mean, look, I can't find a weakness in this movie. I mean, the acting, the writing, the directing, the editing, just all of it, I don't think it could be any better. And the subject matter was so strong that I struggle to find, even if it's not necessarily, if I were to say my favorite movie, it's up there. I'm not sure if it's the top one, but as far as like best made movie of all time, I'd have to put it up there.
I mean, I think,
go ahead.
I'm saying it's a solid movie in every aspect of how you make a movie.
Yeah, and I think one of its strengths too is that it's really kind of timeless. I mean, the message still has just as great of an impact today as it did then.
Yeah.
Well, it's gotten worse than what we had thought. Which is a little bit depressing, but
it's a lot bit depressing.
Well, that's the thing is, like, some of these things, you know, one of the journalism and just the news business has changed so much because of the internet, and perhaps more than any other business. And so in some of the other movies, in like The Paper and Shattered Glass, it's really evident of, oh, things have changed since this movie was made. But with the network, even though things have changed, it is like, and tone wise at least, it's a prediction movie as much as a, you know, what's happening now.
It's also interesting just to look back in the 1970s as to how much power these few corporations had. I mean, if you wanted news, you had your newspaper, your local newspaper, you maybe had a couple of national ones, and then you had broadcast news. Nowadays you have literally hundreds of thousands, if not millions, of sources of news, but yet you still get these kind of figureheads like Rush Limbaugh or Glenn Beck or Rachel Maddow or all over the map, where you can find somebody who employs these tactics for, like, whatever your viewpoint is, which I think is dangerous in a way, because you're never challenged as far as what you think. You could just go to these one person and have your viewpoint reinforced.
It's so easy now to find somebody to agree with you.
Exactly.
You know, you can type on to any message board on the internet and there'll be somebody there, you know, backing up anything you say.
Exactly. So I think that we're all pretty much in consensus on this one, that if you haven't seen
Network's it... Network's amazing.
If you haven't seen it, what the heck is wrong
with you?
You
have to watch Network.
You really do. Now, moving on to our next movie, a movie that came out 18 years later, which is called The Paper. It's directed by Ron Howard of Andy Griffith Show fame. And it follows Michael Keaton...
Happy Days fame.
Ron Howard's...
Yeah, he's in both.
I know, but Happy Days...
I'm pretty sure of American Graffiti fame, guys. Come on.
So this is taking a turn into what's Ron Howard most famous for, land.
The Dilemma. Detour
back. we're gonna detour back into The Paper, which is about Michael Keaton, who is chasing down the story, and it takes place over one day.
Seven to seven.
As far as I can tell. And he's tracking down the story, and his wife, who's played by Marissa Tomei, is very, very pregnant. Yes. And it's about a day in the life of a small town New York, or a small time New York City newspaper, but is sort of like a,
It's a tabloid. Yeah. Because they say they have different standards than, like, you know, the Times would. They're the kind of paper that has a photo taking up the whole front and a big headline. But, you know, at the one point in the movie, Randy Quaid's pre-crazy Randy Quaid says that, you know, they still don't print stuff that's not verified. They're, you know, a little more in your face, but so, they're not like the National Enquirer.
Yeah, it's a... more respectable tabloid. Like,
so it's New York Post, not the National Enquirer. We're nowhere near the Times. Yeah. The Post,
yes,
I think is where we are. So what did you think of this one, Joel?
I almost unconditionally love this movie. Like, there are faults in it, and I'm aware that there are faults in it, but oh man, I love this movie, and I have a feeling that you might not care for it, because I know your movie taste, but this movie's great.
Well, okay, first up, why would I not like it?
Because it's good. And you don't like happy things.
A solid criticism, if there ever was one. It's why I hate Pixar, is because of the happy.
Don't you like all the parts where, like, people can't have babies and stuff in Pixar? Don't those touch that special place?
All right, Mr. Wrestler. All right, we're
gonna
go with
that. Tell me what is so wrong with this movie.
This movie has a main character who the entire movie, you're just sitting around going, what the hell are you doing, you selfish little douche? He's a terrible person. He's like,
see, the guy fighting for truth and justice against the world.
I don't think he is a terrible person.
He is a terrible person. He was like, oh, I have a great job opportunity, even though it's a little snooty. Instead of talking about it with my wife and almost born child, I'm just going to steal it off of the editor's desk, because not only is that unethical, it'll also sabotage any hope I have of having a job in the future. Like, he was just a douche.
See,
how is he not a douche?
I think he was a pretty selfish person and a really impulsive person, but I don't think he was a bad person. Because where he stands is, you know, you have Glenn Close's character she's advanced. She cares more about being right than about the truth, whereas Michael Keaton is pushing, you know, past the wire that he doesn't want to have a gotcha headline on these two kids who might be innocent. And so I think he's a good journalist. And in the end, you do have hope for him. I think in the end, you know, you have this Robert Duvall character who... his relationship with his daughter is ruined. He did, you know, ruin his personal life. I think there's still hope for Michael Keaton, you know, having kind of had this awakening of a crazy day that he's going to change. I think I'm just more hopeful than you, and you're just cynical.
I am so glad you guest hosted this podcast. This is the perfect one to bring you in on.
No, okay. Here's the thing, is that it's obvious over the past 9 months of Marissa Tomei's, you know, pregnancy, he's completely ignored her. The only time he pays even a little bit of attention to her is when she's working as a journalist. So he's it's fairly obvious that his pattern is that he's going to ignore everything in his life to chase down a story. He also wasn't exactly interested in the truth, I don't think, all the time. I think he was just as interested in proving Glenn Close's character wrong. I think that while he could use the truth as his justification for the vendetta against Glenn Close, I think that that had a lot more to do with it than actually saving these two kids. And I don't know, I was just mad at him the entire time, and when he won, I was like, congratulations, you got lucky, but you're still a douche.
I agree that he's a very impulsive person, and that's a very real character flaw in him. He does hinder his opportunities for the future a lot through his impulsiveness. It's why he loses the job at the Sun, or at the Sentinel.
Sentinel.
You know, and he does, he risks losing the second best story just to help, you know, help push the story that he wants, where he sends the flawed photographer after the picture. But no, I do think that he believes that he's in it for the right reasons.
I think he does, but I mean, he also does work for the New York Sun, and maybe it's just because I'm the kind of person who likes Snooty, and I was like, why would you go after the Sentinel when they're clearly better than you?
And see, I can understand why he would stay at the other paper, because it clearly wasn't the right fit for him. And because
he was a douche!
So New York. Everybody who wants to work at a smaller paper instead of the Snooty big paper is a douche.
If you went into the News and Observer and was like, I'm going to steal your stories, and then yes, he would be a douche.
Well, I don't think it was ethical of him. Obviously, he shouldn't have stolen the story, but I don't blame him for not wanting to work
and
there.
And then he chastises Glenn Close for being unethical. Like, he's such a hypocrite.
They're all unethical in some ways.
Right, so why are we cheering for Michael Keaton instead of Glenn Close?
Because he's Michael Keaton. Because it's Batman versus Cruella de Vil. Like, okay. Michael Keaton.
That fight at the end of the movie in the press room was the dumbest thing I have ever seen.
Okay, that part was kind of ridiculous.
It was dumb, Joel.
It was silly.
It was silly.
But I don't really necessarily think that Glenn Close was a bad person either. I think, like Michael Keaton, she let her career ambitions kind of cloud her judgment, but ultimately she went in favor of the truth as well. I think it was kind of an awakening for her too. I mean, they all obviously have a lot of flaws, and that's why I liked it, because I don't know, you know, many journalists that don't have flaws. I don't know many people, period, that don't have flaws.
Well, the other reason I didn't like this movie is because I felt that the, like, tension or, like, you know, the chaos of the newsroom was really forced. Like, nobody ever said a word. And I've been in newsrooms, and I realize I wasn't in a New York newspaper in the 90s.
This was before half the staffs got laid off everywhere.
But still, I was able to talk to one person where it wasn't like a, hey, Jim, you gonna go get the coffee? Yeah, no, man, I got the gun. Like, it was like the 1940s people talking over each other, and it was absolutely ridiculous because people don't talk like
today,
that.
Today, when you're chasing that kind of story and you're on that kind of deadline down to the wire, like, it's gonna be.
But this
chaos.
Was at the beginning where it was like, you have a budget meeting, and now I'm gonna go get the coffee. Why is nobody getting me a Diet Coke? Like, it was just mundane stuff that they were talking over each other. I was just like, really, Ron Howard?
I fully believe that would be the scenario for a small paper like that, where people have to do like three jobs in each thing and work for each other and help each other out on stories. I do agree that the screenwriter really wished he was Aaron Sorkin for some times.
Oh yeah.
but there were scenes where the rapid fire talking could have been written better, but I do think that that's how it would be.
I mean,
at a paper like The Sun.
Yeah.
And I think, I think the flaw was more in the writing than, you know, the overall story. Like, some scenes, like the fight scene in the press, that was ridiculous, but I think that the overall story and the overall depiction of the newsroom, I liked it. I mean, I liked the crazy conversations and people yelling about their Diet Coke and stuff. I mean, I think that's pretty true to life, you know.
But it's
John Grumpy.
I really liked Randy Quaid in this movie, which I don't think I've ever said before.
Have you seen Not Another Teen Movie? Have you seen it? I remember we watched it.
I have seen it. Yes, he is. That's the thing, is like, Randy Quaid will always be remembered as like Not Another Teen Movie or the Vacation series as like the most crazy person in the room. And he still was that in this movie, but it was like toned down to a character that you could believe existed in the real world.
Do you not want to believe Randy Quaid exists?
I don't want to believe the dad from Not Another Teen Movie exists in the real world.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's the kind of thing where like, oh, I can see why you wanted to get into acting at one point in your career, Randy Quaid.
It was a lot of stereotypes about journalism. It was, the editor has a lot of sex with his reporters, and nobody gets any sleep, and they're addicted to caffeine, and one of them has a dumb gun. Like, it was such unbelievable stereotypes of, like, what does a journalist do? Okay, let's throw all those things in a hat and then put them all into every single one of these characters.
But it's the paper. I mean, that's like, it's not a specific thing. I think it strives to be like the standard journalism movie, where it's just a movie about working at a paper. Like, and it borrows heavily from All the President's Men and Absence of Malice and these other movies where a newsroom was a big part of it and focused on that newsroom sequence or that newsroom segment of other movies. I think it's very appreciative of earlier better movies in its making. But
so it's a slightly worse version than all these movies is what we're saying.
But still good. Yeah. Yeah, I will say it's a worse movie than All the President's Men. I will not lose any sleep tonight over making that grand statement that The Paper is not as good a movie as All the President's Men.
Well, you heard it here first, folks. That's why you listen.
I also have to mention that the first time I saw this movie, it was a taped off of TV version. And what's more, it was a taped off of PAX, which is like the Family Values channel.
And so, why were they showing this movie?
I don't know, but like I saw it there and then a few times after off of that same tape. So this is the first time I saw the rated R version of this movie. This movie is really rated R. Like, I had no idea.
Oh, yeah.
So.
All right. So I think we're going to move on to our final movie, which is Shattered Glass, which I think you, my wife, and about 7 other people saw.
At least 7, because I made my college newspaper staff watch it.
So we're up to 12.
You're all right.
Shatterglass. This is a, when did this come out? 2003 movie about, why don't you introduce this one? Because you know more about the backstory than I do.
Sure. Well, this movie is based on a true story. When did the actual event happen? Was it in 1994? 93 in the early to mid 90s.
Yeah.
At the New Republic magazine, which is, you know, very, very well respected. It's the magazine of Air Force One. It's a big deal. And basically this hotshot young reporter, Stephen Glass, you know, turns in story after story, gets heaps of praise, and ultimately it takes this one editor who takes over for the old editor and a couple of the early internet journalists to expose that Stephen Glass has fabricated all or part of more than half of the stories that he's written for the New Republic, and ultimately he's fired. I love this movie. I think it's really well done. It's really well produced, well written. It's one of the few movies that I think Hayden Christensen has ever acted well in. But the movie to me was Peter Sarsgaard's character. I think he absolutely killed it, and I really love the way that he stands up for what journalism is supposed to be and takes accountability, you know, as his editor for, you know, addressing the situation and making it right.
If Network is the anti-journalism movie, this is the journalism movie. This is the one everybody who ever wanted to be a journalist or is a journalist watches just to remind themselves why they did what they did, just because
it is when you realize that, like, Peter Sarsgaard and Rosario Dawson and Steve Zahn are the actual, like, main characters of the movie.
They're the good guys.
Or the protagonists, yeah. But, like, for the first 75% of this movie, it's like, oh, this is bad. Guys, this is going bad. Things are about to go south.
And I don't know. I really loved it. I thought that it was... this was written by Billy Ray, and it was also written by him, too. And what I think he does really well, this is also the guy who did Breach, and he takes really, you know, situations that aren't very tense, and he makes them very tense. I guess that was a really bad way to phrase that. So there you go. And, like, you know, a writer getting caught for plagiarism is an inherently interesting, you know, subject for a film, but I thought that the way it unravels and the writing is so strong that you're on your edge of your seat, at least I was, for the entire movie. And again, you do, at the beginning, you're like, you sort of cheer for Hayden Christensen because he's presented as this really young but really hot shot writer who's really, really good.
He's likable. He's so likable in this movie. Yeah, he's a
really likable person, and that was the problem you see with, like, what's her name? Caitlin, his friend Caitlin. You know, she wants to believe that he is a great journalist because he's a great friend and seemingly a good person, and ultimately she has to realize, you know, he still did something wrong.
I think Peter Sarsgaard did such a good job, like, being the exact opposite of that for so long. He's just kind of, like, awkward and uncomfortable, not very good at public speaking for so much of this movie. And so to throw him up against what Hayden Christensen does, especially to the beginning of the movie and how charismatic he is a good foil for both of those characters.
And what it builds to probably what the best kind of monologue I've heard in film, where he, Caitlin, Peter Sarsgaard's friend, Stephen Glass's friend, is chastising Peter Sarsgaard for what she thinks is unfairly going after him for making a mistake. And this is after Peter Sarsgaard realized that this isn't a one-time mistake on a one story. This is his career of fabricating these stories. And he kind of blows up at her and is like, the rest of the industry is going to take us down, and they absolutely should, because we messed up. And it's an amazing speech that kind of just sums up everything that I really love about this movie.
Yeah.
And I love its focus too on the Rosario Dawson and Steve Zahn characters. They work for Forbes Digital, and that's one of the first things that really put online journalism on the map as a serious form of reporting, is their work in exposing Stephen Glass.
Right, right.
Did you know a ton about this before you saw the movie,
Joel? Me?
Yeah.
Not the first time. This is like the third time I've seen this movie. The first time, no, I had no idea. And I read a little bit about it in between that time and this time. And it's fascinating how this ever got this far, because these stories are so poorly fabricated. Like, the one, the Jute Micronics one, that is the main piece in the movie, and there's just, you know, the second somebody pokes at the story, it completely falls apart, and all, you know, nothing lines up. There's so many things wrong, so many things that he completely fabricated, completely made up, and you have to wonder, like, how in this, you know, such an iconic magazine, how was none of his stuff poked enough to have it fall apart as easily or as much as this story did before now?
Yeah, and I mean, he did cover his tracks, you know, somewhat by getting his brother to pretend to be certain sources and making horrible fake websites and such, but I think a big part of it was just how charismatic he was. You know, they have the scenes of him just entering the newsroom, saying hi to everybody, being really friendly to everybody. I don't think anybody would want to believe that his stuff wouldn't be accurate.
Yeah.
I mean, even right to the end, after he gets suspended, Caitlin is still, you know, pushing for him to get his job back until Peter Sarsgaard's awesome monologue.
Well, it's also, I think that it was kind of the arrogance of the New Republic, where it was like, well, he writes for the New Republic. There's no way.
Yeah, we don't do that.
We don't so. The fact that he became a writer at the New Republic, in their eyes, exonerated him from any of these sorts of suspicions. Like, it was kind of interesting how arrogant that this publication was without really realizing it, and how the startup little digital newspaper took them down so easily. It also is interesting how completely untenable this kind of thing would be with Google.
Yeah.
Can you imagine Stephen Glass trying to do this kind of stuff with internet commenters, first off, because anybody, they come up with a typo, it's immediately in the comments section. There's no way you can do this kind of thing now. And so it was interesting to kind of, this was the very first thing when the internet completely blew the lid off of somebody's lies. Everybody just typing into Google.
There's a scene where, where the secretary is basically talking, she says, you know what could have prevented all of this is pictures. But the thing is, like, when she said that, my first thought was Google. Google could have prevented all of this. And,
saw this in what,
2008? Oh, wait a minute, that didn't quite exist at this point. But, yeah, that was the thing is, yeah, let me Google that for you would have stopped all of this from ever getting to this point.
But then we wouldn't have had this great movie. But you don't like this quite as much as we do, right?
I like it a lot. I don't think it's in my pillar of movies, though. So
it's definitely in mine.
But, I mean, I can't really say anything bad about it. It's interesting as much as it is good. It's fascinating to watch it knowing because so few people have ever heard of it. Really, the only way you know about it is it's that guy who faked all these stories, right. So even though the movie doesn't present itself as the stories are fake, it kind of like unravels that information and we discover it along with Peter Sarsgaard. But if you have seen the movie, you probably went into it knowing that who Stephen Glass was and what he's now famous for.
It was also, I mean, not to go back to what we were just talking about with the paper, but I thought that this captured what a newsroom, this is a magazine as opposed to a paper, and I realize that, but I do feel as though this probably captured what a real newsroom was like a little bit better than the paper was. People weren't going through crazy antics like firing off guns and yelling at each other over soda, but there was a lot of talking, and people were dealing with a lot of different things at once, but I kind of got an authenticity with Shattered Glass in a way I didn't with the paper, and I wasn't really supposed to with Network. You weren't really supposed to feel like you were in reality with
right.
Network. But I felt like I got a real sense of what it would be like to work at a news or a magazine like that in the late 90s.
And I think you just said the key difference is this is a magazine. It's not a daily newspaper, and therein lies the difference.
Well, that's the thing right. is, like, you look at Shattered Glass, they do a whole sequence of, like, this is how much time we spend on each article. Like, here's the checking it and the
yeah, they rechecking. Can devote way more time to that. It's a lot less, it's not hectic in the same way because they're all about the really serious, in-depth, we fact-check the crap out of this pieces.
Well, right, but if you talk to a doctor that worked in an ER, they're not going to say that every single moment of their lives is going to be like the television show. Like,
yeah, I'm not saying that every single moment of a newsroom is like the paper.
But that's what the paper kind of.
The paper was only one day though. It just happened to be one really hectic day.
Kinda not at the beginning. It was like they had a budget meeting and he had a job interview.
Well,
ooh, crazy day at the newspaper.
The thing with the paper is
Coke at the newspaper, Joel. We're gonna have to run all over the place. Something happened in downtown. Oh, my goodness!
The thing with working at a newspaper is every day you start with nothing again. Every day you go into work with a blank paper to fill again. And that's the same at a magazine, but you got a month instead of a day to do it. Or a week if you're at a weekly magazine. But, that's the difference.
Yeah, I think they're two completely different atmospheres, and I'm not saying that I think the paper is an accurate depiction of an everyday newsroom. It is a movie, but I don't think that the New Republic, in Shattered Glass is what you would be able to call your typical newsroom either.
Shattered Glass is the only one also that's based on a true story. The paper doesn't pretend to be nonfictional. They're caricatures of people to be entertaining. So, yeah, they're going to be more eccentric.
And that's fine. I don't know, maybe that just doesn't appeal to me as far as, we're going back to the paper, which we promised to leave behind, and we're seeing it back to Shattered Glass. But
the reason that Shattered Glass is such a good movie is because Hayden Christensen is such a good guy at the beginning. At the beginning of the movie, he basically details how he gets away with it, with saying that he remembers birthdays and, you know, he says hi to people in the hallway. And the way it's set up, you're listening to that and you're thinking, that's the exact thing I should always do in life. What a great guy to do these things. And it gets revealed that, oh, he's using all this to be able to con this magazine. And
the movie doesn't work unless you like Hayden Christensen at the end and you dislike Peter Sarsgaard. You have to like Hayden Christensen at the beginning and you have to hate Peter Sarsgaard at the beginning, and right. Then it has to reverse. And one of the characters we haven't really talked about yet, but I really liked, was Hank Azaria's character, a.k.a. Mo the bartender from The Simpsons. But
a.k.a. Phoebe's boyfriend on Friends.
Yes.
He was the original editor at the beginning of this movie, who was kind of a lot cooler, a lot more lax as far as what he would let his writers do. He just put out a good magazine, but it was just a much different style than what Peter Sarsgaard did.
He was the cool uncle of the paper.
He was the cool uncle, and then when Hayden Christensen goes to talk to him about it after everything's been revealed, you can see the kind of pain that he has knowing that this happened on his watch as well, and that how much that hurt him, and how much it probably hurt Hayden Christensen's character, because even though he's a pathological liar and kind of a heartless person, you still got the impression that he felt bad and he felt remorse, and or at least in the way Hayden Christensen portrayed him. From what I've seen of the actual Stephen Glass, I don't get the impression that he's kind of a sociopath. But
well, he wrote a novel about this. Like, he is...
His novel is the most truthful thing he's ever written.
He is kind of coasting on being that guy that conned everybody.
Which is kind of ridiculous, that he made a lot more money after this was revealed than he did while he was actually a legitimate reporter, which is a little sad, but...
But that's that. Go back to Network for that one. When you have crazy sensationalist person, everybody's got to know what happened there, and they're willing to pay.
And we've brought it back full circle.
Look at that!
That was impressive.
See? Yeah, I'm pleased with that one.
I think that we've wrapped up our
I would say solidly watch all of these movies.
I would say watch all of these movies because I have been outvoted and I believe in democracy. So, I hated the paper.
I was going to say, what are you talking about? You hated this movie.
I really hated the paper. But,
I love the paper.
At least make up your own mind for it.
Clearly, there's discerning opinions on the paper. So, yes.
Agreed. Right. Well, I'd like to thank Alexa, first off, for joining us for
thank
our special.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you, Alexa. Next week, we will be looking at some Oscar winners. For those, I guess, listening live or as live as you can listen to a podcast like this, the Oscars have just happened. So we're going to take a look back through all of the pictures to ever win Best Oscar. And, you know, the ones that we've seen, we'll decide if they deserved that prestigious award or not. And then we'll conclude it with our thoughts on this year's Oscars. So come back for that one.
All right, we'll see you next week.